Hello and welcome to the Habit Coach Podcast. I'm Ashton Doctor, your Habit Coach. And today I have one of my closest friends with me who's an endocrinologist. I met her about 3 years ago when I was getting very excited about this whole space about the human body and I was starting to learn about hormones. And we completely geeked out about understanding hormones and what does it do to fasting and what is sugar. And I was saying that the world needs to know and understand this whole thought about diabetes and sugar, and especially from her, because what she does is she distills it down to such a simple way and to such a simple understanding that, you know, you can take control of your health. And we all know people who are diabetic. My father is diabetic. Every family will have someone who is diabetic. And it's important for us to know, whether we're diabetic or not, how to deal with a person who has diabetes, or at least understand it. So let me welcome Roshni Sanghani to the podcast. Welcome.
Hi, Ashton. Thanks for having me here.
My pleasure. We've been trying to do this podcast for, I think, 2 years now. Before I started the Habit Coach, we tried recording on our phone. It was a complete disaster.
Yes, I was very embarrassed about that day.
But hopefully things have changed. It's going to be a lot more fun now.
Absolutely. I'm really happy to see what you've been doing. And I think one of the things that we sparked off 3 years back was a mutual interest in just learning.
Just learning. Being interested and curious, right? And that has changed so much of this kind of stuff that we do. So let's dive into this whole thought about what is endocrinology? And in that context, what is diabetes? Like, I know people say, main diabetes doctor ke paas jata hun. And what is this whole difference between endocrinology and diabetes?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think even my own family doesn't know what my work is. So we'll start with saying that I'm a medical doctor.
All right.
MBBS from KEM Hospital, and then MD Medicine. So that's 3 years of studying the internal workings of the body.
Okay.
And that is the platform for anybody to then go and super specialize into. If you want to be a cardiologist, you go after MD Medicine and study the heart. Similarly, after MD Medicine, I went and studied the hormones.
Okay.
So that's a fellowship in endocrinology. The word represents the hormones. And how diabetes fits into that is that it's a problem with insulin.
Correct.
And insulin is a hormone.
Right.
So we are the maximally trained doctors when it comes to diabetes. But diabetology oftentimes is MBBS plus 1 year of a course which could let you become a diabetologist. Some MBBS doctors also call themselves diabetologists because they specialize in it as their main practice.
Okay.
So it's important to know the educational qualification of an endocrinologist, I guess. Sometimes, because I talk so much about food and nutrition as part of the treatment, they think I might be a dietitian or a nutritionist.
Correct.
So it's important to know that I'm a medical doctor who's a bit obsessed with healthy lifestyle.
In fact, the thing that attracted us to talking to each other was this entire concept of how do we get off medicine, right? Can we get off this whole thing of we have to heal ourselves using external things? But what about if we start changing our lifestyle? And Roshni is all about that. So in fact, after I met her for the first time, I immediately sent my dad to her, right? And I said that this doctor I found, her entire goal is how do we get you off meds? And that's what our goal should be. So that's a fantastic approach that you have. So big clap to you.
Thank you. And since this is an IVM podcast, it's an Indian podcast, I'll say in Hindi that we have a dawakhana concept in India, that when you go to see the doctor, it's a dawakhana. And my proposal is that it's a dawa kam khana, dawa mat khana.
I love it. Well, what about dawa daru? Dawa daru is...
Not that.
I love it. Okay, so dawa kam khana. Superb. So when we think about diabetes, okay, let me ask a very strange question. Okay, apart from type 1 diabetes, do you think type 2 diabetes should exist?
It did exist in times historic when there was overweight.
Okay.
But what was not understood back then, that that form of diabetes was not the same as type 1. The person with type 1 was found to be losing weight and having insulin deficiency. And because the only way they could diagnose it was through the urine, that the urine would be sweet. That's what diabetes mellitus stands for. Sweet urine. They thought that both of these types of diabetes might need the same treatment. But type 2 diabetes, actually, you're right, should not exist because it does come from the lifestyle. So now that we see the epidemic scale at which it is with our modern lifestyles, it's a shame and it's a tragedy, honestly, when it is something that can be removed.
Correct. And are they the same disease? Like, if you think about it, are type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes actually the same thing? Like, not necessarily putting doctor's head on, but just like as a curious person.
As a curious person, the urine is sweet. So if you have your type 2 diabetes out of control, the urine would be sweet. And in the older ways of making a diagnosis, that's how they would ask for a urine sample. Or you nowadays might hear in still rural parts of India that they notice ants coming next to the sprays of or droplets of urine that have been left in the bathroom. But beyond that, type 1 and type 2 are completely different. The problem, the solution, completely different. And we should not be nowadays waiting for sweet urine.
Correct. It should never happen. It should never happen. And, you know, when we start thinking about diabetes, what are the thoughts that come to mind, like when a diabetic comes to you for the first time? What are the things that they should know? What are the things that they think about?
Yeah, so especially when it comes to type 2 diabetes, I like to not label them as diabetic.
Okay.
I like to, it's a little politically correct nowadays to say person with diabetes, especially in type 2, because you can actually reverse it. So that's one thing coming in the door. I would like them to not feel like it's part of their identity. It is something that they can work on. And it's very common. It slips out of our mouth all the time.
Absolutely. In fact, we did an entire podcast on this, saying what are your labels?
Exactly.
Right? Like as soon as you call yourself a diabetic, you've succumbed. Now that is your personality. That's who you are. Right, I'm a person with diabetes is very different from I'm a diabetic.
Yeah, and I heard that podcast of yours. It was awesome.
Thank you. So when somebody comes in with diabetes, what is the first thing that you would end up telling them? Like, how would you take them through the cycle of saying that you don't need to be stuck on these meds?
So a lot of reframing the way I talk about diabetes now has come from things I learned from Dr. Jason Fung about type 2 diabetes and his book, The Diabetes Code. And something had been nagging me that the way we're going about this is not right and we need to focus on the lifestyle. So now, using Dr. Fung's description, we do now say that type 2 diabetes is an overflow concept. So I wish, and we try and simplify that for a person walking in who's not a doctor, that type 2 diabetes is a concept of fuel overflow. The high blood sugar is overflowing sugar from stored sites, from storage sites that are full to the brim. So if they understand it as an overflow model, it changes the entire paradigm of what we should be doing as the treatment.
Okay. So like, how would you even think about this? So people say, I have like high blood sugar. That's how people approach this. So how would you break it down? Like, is your body supposed to have that much blood sugar? Like, they're worried about having too much? Is it too little? How does it flow?
Correct. So what's important to know that type 2 diabetes is an insulin problem before it becomes a blood sugar problem.
Okay.
So simply people may know that they've had borderline diabetes for a while, and it's something that they kind of sat on for a while. It was an early stage. And at that time, if they had done their insulin levels, they would have seen those were sky high. The pancreas was working overtime. And the overflow concept is that there's too much nutrition coming in.
Okay.
More than the body knows what to do with.
So there's too much food coming in?
Too much food coming in.
Okay.
And you will typically see the average person with type 2 diabetes is having a growing waistline.
All right.
We really should not be tolerating that, especially the Asian Indian genotype or the genetic composition that we are as Indians. We cannot handle growing waistlines the way Caucasians and Europeans can. So a relatively thin looking Indian who feels they are overall thin may still have a waist circumference that's actually pushing them towards diabetes.
Correct.
And that is the overflow. The body's been trying to store it in the fat before it gets into the blood.
Right. It's all the visceral fat that typically would make these bellies, right?
Correct. And even for someone who looks skinny, there's a word we call TOFI, thin on the outside, fat on the inside.
TOFI.
T-O-F-I, right. Yes. Right.
Okay. So skinny fat, as the fitness magazines call them.
Skinny fat.
Right? Mm-hmm. So then what do we do about this? So if there is an overflow of food, right? And the world is full of them, right? We are full of buffets, unlimited buffets. So how do we get around this? Like, is everyone going to get diabetes because of this? Like, how does it go?
I think the best way to safeguard against it is to tune into the body.
Okay.
Like the same thing that we've kind of connected on is being in with, you know, amazement about how the human body is created. Is that's our safety net. Is yes, we can taste good food and tasty food with our taste buds. But if we use our stomach fullness and hunger signals to know how much and the awareness that what I'm eating might be a super tasty food created by the food industry where it may go from one bite to two, three, four, where I can't stop.
Addictive
foods, which are omnipresent everywhere you see them and constantly available 24/7 food industry that exists. They're not our friends. They're not there to keep me healthy. They're there to sell their products. So knowing that and being cautious about how I engage with those foods is the most important safety net, I think, to decide how much to put in to our mouths.
Mm. And how do you go about doing something like that?
We break it down, you know. You have to keep it simple. So if you just suddenly, what I find is difficult is if someone is slapped with a list of don't eat these things.
Mm.
That just hits the psychology negatively. And the person struggles to follow, well, why are you taking away all these tasty foods from me?
Correct.
So we don't do that.
It's just too much of a stress.
It's too much restriction. And no human mind wants to be restricted. It's our nature from the time we were born to be free-thinking, independent spirits. So nobody likes the psychology of being restricted. And that's why it's hard to stick with a diet plan for the rest of your life.
Correct.
So it's about learning to balance. And my whole thing about this is to approach it with a vision of balance.
Mm.
How do you balance your nutrition, sleep, stress, and exercise where it's not that every piece of sweet that you put in your mouth is taking you towards diabetes if you know how to balance that portion,
okay,
as well as have an overall healthy lifestyle with the other aspects. It's not only nutrition. And you often find families struggle with this because the relatives want the person to not put it in their mouth. The person wants to have it.
Mm.
There's a political pressure in the house, like, don't eat it because they're worried. We don't want you to get sick. And it creates this big tension around food.
Yep.
And that's not the only thing we have to look at.
Because it is, I remember when my father first found out that he had diabetes, we were sitting at the dining table and he was very solemn and he said that, you know, our life is going to change now. I can't believe that this is like, and it's a burden because you're seeing other people enjoy themselves or think that they're enjoying themselves. And you're like, why am I being the deprived one? Right, and all of diabetes is actually around this whole thought of deprivation. I know so many people who will say that I will eat the laddu and have two extra tablets. Right, that's one way of like handling it, but it's so silly because actually being a diabetic, for me, when I think about it, boils down to you're damn lucky because now you can actually make a change in your life.
Sure, so it can be a wake-up call. And to come back to the example you just gave of try and have the laddu and take two more pills, if you understand that type 2 diabetes is an overflow concept, and the visual to look at is maybe a matka, a earthen pot full of water, which has a tap at the bottom and it's got a tap at the top, which is filling the water in. If that tap is on and the matka is overflowing, which would be the diabetes example, that the visceral fat sites are now full, you don't have any more place, and the overflow that you see of the water spilling out of the jug is the high blood sugar spilling out.
Correct.
So trying to take the laddu with two more pills is trying to like stuff more water into the pot while, I don't know, you know, squishing more water inside. I'm not sure how you would even successfully do.
Like pressurizing.
Pressurize, yes. Yeah. Or how our Mumbai Western Railway, how more people pressurize to get in that train before it leaves the platform.
Correct.
And there are people dangling off the sides. It's an overflow phenomenon. That's not really solving the overcrowding of the train.
Correct.
What you need to do is have a more sensible way of people getting in and out. So that would be the way to understand that the one laddu plus two medicine is not really keeping you healthy just because you polished off the blood sugar and you don't see it. It's being smashed somewhere inside your cells and organs.
So one is getting too many people in. Now, how do we get these people out of this train?
And that's where the whole thing of fasting comes up. And the first time you did a 3-day fast, I thought you were crazy.
Mm.
But I went ahead and did one too.
Trendsetter hashtag.
Yes, you are. So intermittent fasting allows for the bottom tap of that earthen pot to be opened while you switch off the inflow into the pot, which is shut the tap off from above. So you stop putting more in, or if it's the train, you halt more passengers from getting onto the train and let them exit first.
Okay.
Open up the bottom tap. That's what fasting would do, is it empties out some of those storage sites.
Okay.
And that's how we look at reversal now.
So when we're thinking about fasting, it's become a cool thing to do, right? How do we understand fasting not just from a weight loss point of view, but also from a you should be healthy point of view?
Yes. So because it's a now buzzword and everybody tries it, it's a good thing.
Hmm.
But now, of course, critics are saying it's the latest fad. It's going to go away. It's not right. We need to know that the human evolution has happened through phases of food deprivation. We were never given 24/7 access to food. And so we were designed with a very sophisticated system to adapt in the stages of fasting to then use those fixed deposits, use the assets that we've stored away in the bank, liquidate them, bring them into the current account, use those, spend those, and then hopefully the person is able to acquire food again. So fasting, feasting is part of how the body's designed. Now that we've become used to this very toxic modern life, we've not balanced out the nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise. So what we do with our clients before we throw them into the world of fasting is we make sure that our basics are sorted. The nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise. Otherwise, you hear people who will say, I tried fasting and it didn't work for me.
And it didn't work for me. Why do you think it? Is there a right way of fasting? Like, I've done tons of podcasts on it, but like, according to you, what is the right way of fasting? Like, how would you go about it?
Well, every expert will want to say that their way is the right way. So I'm not going to, you know, I think what we should be aware of is if it's working for someone, they should continue what they're doing. If someone's struggling, then we should try and decode where they might be off in the nutrition. Maybe their protein wasn't to target before the fast. Maybe they don't have healthy fats going in. In terms of sleep, it's a huge piece of what we do with our patients is make sure the sleep is okay. I know you've done lots of podcasts on sleep. And so many points on sleep quality and quantity. We see patients who will say, well, my sleep is great. I can fall asleep at the drop of a hat or, you know, just put me in bed or on a sofa anywhere. I can fall asleep. And to me, that's clear indication that you have a sleep quality, quantity problem.
Correct.
Stress. If your stress is not okay, if food has been a crutch or a resource when you were stressed, suddenly putting you into fasting can do a lot to your mind. Some people prefer that as a way to reveal what the craving is all about, but some people find that very difficult.
Okay.
So, doing
so can fasting also add to the stress?
Yes, because if you're feeling deprived when you go into it, there's a problem.
Okay.
So fasting is not starvation.
Right.
I'm not starving you.
And it's not depriving.
It's not depriving. So if you go into fasting with that mindset, it's going to be more difficult. It needs to be something you think you're doing for your body.
Correct.
So that you're not battling your own self. Your subconscious mind will start throwing a very big fight. And it's very difficult for the conscious mind to win against the subconscious mind.
Correct. In fact, if you think of fasting as recovery, right? It's a far better way of thinking about it than saying that, you know, I wish I could eat this and I'm feeling deprived. As soon as you feel deprived, game over.
Yeah.
Right? You have to love what you're eating, whether it's a gajar instead of a potato chip or whatever the choices that you've made, but you have to enjoy what you're doing.
Exactly right. So I feel that it would be unhelpful to try and fast when you're feeling sorry for yourself about fasting.
Correct.
And exercise. If you only fast and don't exercise, that's also not what our hunter-gatherer ancestors did when they were in their fasting, feasting mode. They were also working around, moving around, looking for the next meal. So they were not sitting just plonked away.
Eating. And then feeling stressed.
Right. Huh. And even during the fast, they were moving. They were moving around to find the food. Rather, they had to be more agile, more sharp, more vigilant to figure out where's the next meal going to come from. Should I dig under the rocks and find some tubers or potatoes, like raw, climb a tree, go get some berries, go hunt.
Correct.
So physical activity should be something you can do during your fast.
Yeah. In fact, make the food harder. Right? Make the food harder to reach as much as possible. Like I was, like we were just talking about it the other day, saying that instead of getting shelled walnuts, get the walnuts with the shell. It takes a little bit more effort to do, but at least you won't end up eating 25 walnuts. You'll probably end up eating 12.
I saw that walnut shell of yours.
You saw the walnut shell of yours. Right? So the whole thing is that how do we make our lives slightly more inconvenient in these things? And you know, since you're talking about this right now, a thought came up saying that there are the ways to deal with diabetes. If you just think about it as in and out as a thought, the two in things are nutrition and stress, right? The more you eat, the more you start building up. And the same thing with stress, because when you're stressed out, the body is constantly trying to conserve. So it is trying to keep it in without letting anything go, right? And the way to leave these or get the outflow part is fasting and exercise.
Fantastic.
Right? So if you can just start breaking these things down to asking yourself, am I doing too much of the in or am I doing too much of the out or not enough of the out? And start bringing that kind of a balance to your life. Chances are you might not get diabetes. Is that a way of thinking about it?
Sure. Yeah, it sounds like a good prevention strategy. And what I just heard you say was nice, was where you're saying, make it a little bit more difficult for myself. I think that comes when you live with a growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. And we have that image up on our wall in the clinic and on all the tables is coming into this approach with a growth mindset can give you diabetes prevention and reversal because you'll have to learn a lot of things that you didn't know. There's a lot to do that's different. And if you feel like this is it, this is the best that can happen with me, that's all there is, then you limit where you can reach.
Correct. And if you're not thinking about getting better, you just feel like I'm stuck, I'm screwed. There's no way that I can change.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think we are not yet fully awakened to this concept. I mean, forget patients. Even doctors yet are not all aware of this concept. Mm. And maybe when we don't know something, we get scared of it. Mm. Maybe the cognitive dissonance or difficulty with a doctor having to deal with changing the way they practice. Mm. Because I'll tell you that I have sat across tables as a qualified doctor, convincing patients that insulin is the right treatment for their type 2 diabetes. And that's something that has completely dropped away from my practice. So I had to be willing to forgive myself for doing what I thought was being taught to me through my books and be willing to say, look, I'm open to a new way of looking at this, which seems to be helping my patients better. So being willing to let go of a past way when you see a new way that makes more sense takes some guts. And we need more of that so that the patients and the society gets that message from more than one place. But as of today, I end up telling my patients we're about to do something that's a bit maybe against the norm, against convention.
Unorthodox.
So we got to stick together.
Yep. Because I remember the first time when we were discussing this and when he said that insulin is just going to get you buried faster and faster. Because the whole thought was that you can't get out of insulin, right? So it just becomes this cycle. Do you want to talk a little bit about insulin and how people think about it and how people should think about it?
Yeah. And the sad thing is that we are taught in our medical meetings that diabetes is a chronic progressive disease. Type 2 diabetes is chronic and progressive. And now I realize that the fine print there, the byline which we missed, is it's only chronic and progressive if you don't change your lifestyle.
Right.
So the insulin piece is, again, coming back to realizing that type 2 diabetes is a problem of too much insulin.
Hmm.
So how can you solve a problem of too much insulin by giving more insulin?
Yeah, type 2 diabetes is having too much insulin that's not being used.
Correct.
And now you're putting more insulin.
It's not solving
the problem. Something will get used, right?
Yeah.
Whereas type 1 diabetes is very different because type 1 diabetes is all about not having enough insulin.
Yes.
Correct? As a result, the sugar is not getting into your system.
Right.
So I think we should have discussed this a little bit earlier on, but what is insulin? What does it do? Right? Because this whole piece around diabetes revolves around it. So what does insulin do?
It's a very important hormone. Mm-hmm. You need it to stay alive.
Okay.
And a hormone, what's a hormone? Let's back up.
All right.
What's a hormone? A hormone is something that is secreted by a gland and it gets delivered to the entire body through the bloodstream. So let me give you a different example first. Is when we cry, our tear glands are right next to the eye.
Correct.
And there is a tear duct which lets the tears come to our eyes and come out. So the secretion of the tear gland comes through a duct. But when you have a hormone...
And the tear doesn't come out of your finger.
It doesn't reach anywhere else.
Anywhere.
It's very local.
It's just in the eye.
You only need tears in your eyes.
Correct.
But hormones are required through the entire body, which is one of the things that got me very fascinated with becoming a specialist in hormones, because I was amazed at how glands can secrete things that they know intelligently how those hormones will affect all distant organs, like at different corners of the body. So insulin affects every organ. That's why we say diabetes affects every organ. Every cell has the ability to use glucose to make its own glucose also.
Okay.
So that's another myth there that you need to eat sugar to stay fine. No, you don't. But insulin's job is to help the fuels get into the cells.
Okay.
Whether it's sugar or if sugar is absent, then it will help the body use other fuels that have come in, like protein, not so much stimulated by fat. But insulin is secreted most when you eat carbs, which the body will then turn to sugar, and the sugar needs to be delivered into the cell.
Correct.
But it'll do it with protein also.
Okay.
So it's a hormone that helps
nutrients.
But nutrient.
Is insulin putting the protein in only for energy, or is it putting it as a building block as well?
It's a growth hormone as well.
Right.
It has many growth-related effects also. So it's doing many things. So it's oversimplification to think that insulin only works to keep the blood sugar normal.
Correct.
We will continue to learn more about insulin's function, but to say it's only for diabetes is not accurate. It has a lot to do with cholesterol metabolism, triglyceride metabolism, blood pressure, salt. Now, salt, blood pressure, those are things that are affecting every corner of the body.
Correct.
And insulin is related to that.
Right.
So there are many things we need to respect about insulin to not overuse it. It's a brilliant hormone. We need it to stay alive. But too much of a good thing can become a bad thing.
Absolutely. And you know, when we start thinking about chronic illness or lifestyle diseases, right, as they're called, it's so interesting that for most of the diseases, the cures are the same, right? For most of our lifestyle diseases, all the cures are in your hand and completely in the way that you live or you choose to live. And as soon as that penny drops, you can say, fine, I'm going to decide today I will never get diabetes. I will decide today I will never get high blood pressure. I'll decide today I never get, what's another one?
PCOS.
PCOS.
Fatty liver.
Fatty liver.
A lot. Uric acid.
Yeah.
A growing waistline.
Mm-hmm.
We can tie all of those together.
They're all in the same bucket.
Yes. And prevention and reversal, all of those things, we've seen them get better when people understand insulin.
In just one thought, right? Insulin. So, you know, to tie this stuff together, if you have diabetes, what are the first things that you should do from a lifestyle point of view? So we're not giving medical advice on this podcast, right? We have to make that very clear. But what are the lifestyle things that you should, in any case, start making as a change if you found out to have diabetes?
Yeah, so definitely I'm not speaking for your medication or your medical advice right now. I'm talking to you.
You must pass everything to your doctor.
Must talk to your doctor about this.
Or come meet Roshni.
No, we're not plugging for me here. But yeah, the first things to do when you find out you have type 2 diabetes, and you can confirm that, yes, with the blood sugar readings, with a hemoglobin A1C, HbA1C, because sometimes you think about just doing the fasting and the 2-hour post. So even confirming, how do you know you have diabetes? You want to confirm that on 2 separate tests,
mm-hmm,
of blood sugar as well as hemoglobin A1C, which gives you the 90-day average of what's happening in the blood. You can also, if you're an academic geek or curious, is do the C-peptide and the fasting insulin as your baseline to know where you started out when you found out you had diabetes, because you would like to see that insulin number come down along with the blood sugar. And nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise. So one of the first things you can do, again, tuning into the body, is check maybe if you have that growth mindset, is how did I get here? Most people know. Most people know how they got there. What did they do with the nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise to get where they got?
Or not do.
Yes. What they weren't doing.
What they weren't doing.
And so maybe tuning into the body, let the body be the guide here as far as, am I even hungry? Sometimes people eat when they're not hungry.
So let's break it up into these four.
Nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise.
Nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise, right? Okay. There are four of them.
Sure.
Okay, but one caveat before this. Did you notice that when we're talking about this, we're not saying that because of my genetics, I have got diabetes, right? It is because of the choices I made that I've got diabetes. Okay, so get the genetic thought out. It might affect, might not affect, but, you know, that's the hand you're dealt in any case, but everything else is in your hands, right?
Yep. And Ashton, I'll speak for you and me both here that we may have inherited a genetic tendency, but I have no plans to refund my DNA. It's not going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure I'm not going to touch a life of diabetes.
Warranty khalas.
Warranty khalas. And I touched pre-diabetes and came out, and I share that with people. My hemoglobin A1C touched 6.1, and it's now in the normal range, 5.1.
Right.
And I've seen my blood sugar go up high when I've eaten certain foods. And I know that was during a stress patch of my own. So I was very aware, because during my 2 pregnancies, I had absolutely no diabetes whatsoever. So coming to nutrition, yes. So even if you have a genetic tree full of it, I've heard people sometimes say it was just a matter of time before I get it, because I know it's in my family. I know I'm supposed to get it.
That's defeatist.
It's very defeatist, and that's not true. Correct. And sometimes you allow yourself to not focus on nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise, because you've kind of thrown in the towel before the game even started. So what would be the first things you could do in nutrition is tune into your body.
Mm-hmm.
Check when you're hungry or not hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we eat on a clock.
Mm-hmm.
We eat because it's convenient or it's tempting.
Mm-hmm.
We go past the sensation of fullness. It's what I teach is mindful eating, a lot of mindfulness. Yes, learning how to balance food that tastes good but may not be good for my health.
Mm-hmm.
Not to keep a restrictive mindset about it, going into some dieting mode, because you won't sustain a diet forever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't. And carbohydrates. You need to understand carbohydrates and protein, which takes a lot of learning, but it's not so difficult once you understand.
Do you want to spend like 30 seconds talking about carbohydrates?
Typical Indian carbohydrates would be... Okay, so...
When you think about diabetes, you only think sugar. So I'm saying
that's
the reason why we have to think about other things.
So the non-sweet things.
Yeah.
I'm not mentioning the sweet ones and fruit. Everybody knows those have sugar or natural sugar in them. And again, everything is all allowed in moderation and balance.
Mm.
But the non-obvious Indian carbohydrates, which are directly raising blood sugar in so many people, jawar, bajri, nachni, upma, poha, the rusk biscuits.
Wheat.
Wheat, yes. How
rice.
Did I miss wheat?
No.
Yeah, wheat
rice.
In all forms.
I suppose you stop wheat.
Yeah.
Probably because of that.
Cornflakes, muesli,
corn.
Fermented South Indian, like the batters, the rice batters, dosa batters, oats, buckwheat, the kuttu that they call it, gosh, there's a lot, khakras, lots of Indian carbohydrates that we don't count.
Correct.
Kurmuras, people think are, makhanas. Oh my gosh, how can I forget makhanas?
Right.
99% of a makhana is carb. So it gets popular because it's low fat.
Yeah. In fact, I love doing this with my clients. I say that, all right, let's go through what you ate yesterday. And they would start with their breakfast and they had probably dosas and something. And then for lunch was rice, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, you go through the entire thing and you realize that you had rice for breakfast, you had rice for lunch, and God knows what you're going to have for dinner. But the idea is that you're only eating carbs through the day.
Yes.
And for us, 80% of what we eat is carbs.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Now, yes. So somebody will argue with me, well, I only eat this much. I only eat so little. Yeah. Or my roti is so patla.
Hmm.
So I'm like, but ma'am, you're not patla. So there's a problem. Right?
Something is sneaking in from somewhere.
Somewhere.
It may not be that patla roti, but somewhere it's coming in.
Yes, it's carbs.
I had 3 dosas in the morning. Probably that's what it is.
And then they really feel frustrated that, well, I stopped putting ghee. I mean, it's kora roti. It's no ghee on the roti. So why am I still gaining all this?
So now it's tasteless.
Yes, it's tasteless. I don't like it. Hmm. And it's fat free. So why is my body gaining all this fat? And that's where it ties to the insulin. But so those are the typical Indian carbs. And again, this dieting logic let's take makhana, right? There's 90%+ carbohydrate in a makhana, but it's popular because it's low fat.
Mm.
So the idea is to understand carbohydrates and work on reducing those.
Right.
When you reduce those, then a person will have a panic. Well, but I'll be hungry if I don't eat these things. Mm. These are my filler items.
Mm.
Well, there are many other things to take for fullness. And I just did a small post on this yesterday about how protein will fill you up, carbs won't.
Correct.
So the hormonal message of I'm full, it's time to stop eating, gets garbled up and doesn't reach the brain when it's carbs that you're eating.
Absolutely.
So check with anybody who's eating carbs. They're the one who'll be hungry all day.
All day.
Yeah. So
I like to give the example of Chinese food, right? As soon as, you know, it's the popular belief that as soon as you have Chinese food, you'll be hungry within an hour.
Yes.
Right? That is because everything in Chinese food is carbs. Fried rice, noodles,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And you got corn flour in your soup.
Yes.
So it's just carbs everywhere.
And we missed bread. How did we miss bread?
Chinese food and bread.
No, I miss bread in my list. No Chinese food reminds me of bread.
Yeah.
So going on to the protein aspect of things would allow you to feel full. So check and, you know, yes, people will then complain about digestive issues like, oh my God, I'm going to eat protein. I'm going to feel digestive issues. That's the learning process is you have to retrain the body. It's a sick body that doesn't know how to digest food and the gut microbes are off. So learning how to go low carb, get the proteins up to target is a very important first step to get your blood sugars down.
So step one is only eat when you feel hungry. Now, if you're going to be on a carb based diet, you will feel hungry all the time. So hence, before that, what you have to do is you have to first start lowering the amount of carbs that you're taking in, increase the number of vegetables that you're eating or protein that you're eating. Would that be a fair way of looking at it?
So I'm going to rephrase that.
All right.
There is a slight restrictive message when we say only eat if you're hungry.
Okay.
Because I just walked into the IVM studio and if you would have offered me a biscuit, and I wasn't hungry, I might have still had it.
Right.
That doesn't mean I'm breaking a rule here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to put it as a question to build awareness in my mind and my philosophy is rather than be slapped with the rule, only eat if you're hungry, trust you. Why are you eating when you're not hungry? You need to know that why. You might eat because it's social. It's a tasting amount. You're a chef. You're sampling your foods.
Correct.
There might be reasons why you might eat when you're not hungry. But when you've already identified why, you will know how much to take. But if I say don't, well, it's going to happen someday in your life that you will eat
Correct.
When you're
And
not.
Then you feel guilty.
And then you just go overboard because you didn't hold yourself accountable.
Correct.
So I rephrase that. So why eat if you're not hungry? Reduce your carbs. Fill up your plate with more proteins and vegetables. And that's a very good starting point.
That's a starting point.
Very good.
I think this is
point.
A good starting point for people who have diabetes and people who don't ever want to get diabetes, right? As a side note, have you eaten today?
Oh, yes. I had breakfast this morning.
You had breakfast this morning. All right. Because it's like it's reaching 12 o'clock and we haven't. I haven't at least. Okay. The next thing. Nutrition then?
Sleep.
Sleep.
Sleep quality, sleep quantity.
Okay.
Two huge ones. So
how does that affect blood sugar? Like why?
Oh, because it is a stress on the body to not sleep.
Okay.
You have insulin resistance directly tied to shortened sleep. They've done tests where you cut somebody's sleep and then check their insulin levels. And this has been done in research labs. It's been proven that you would have more insulin resistance and you would fail a diabetes test when you've had 4 hours of sleep versus eight.
Okay.
So obviously in a study, they're doing something extreme, but we city people do have frequent times where we're sleeping less than the optimal of 7 to 8 hours. And the chronic sleep deprivation does add up.
Mm.
We just haven't gone into every house, millions of homes around the world, but this is a chronic problem around the planet right now, sleep
Correct.
Deprivation.
Correct.
Sleep quality, a huge one. I could go on and on. I think we have to do another podcast for that. But the interruption of our hormonal sleep cycle, where we were programmed to understand sunrise and sunset, only the birds do that nowadays. And I met a patient who was actually surprised when I told him that, have you noticed that the birds don't chirp at night? And he said, really? I haven't noticed. And that just tells you, we live in cities and we've forgotten, we don't tune in to the birds anymore. And birds will usually be up at 4, 4:30 and
Correct.
They'll be quiet after 6 p.m. You'll not hear them chirping.
Hmm.
So being in tune with the sun is something human beings evolved with. It's only in the last 150 years, not even that much, that we created the ability to have a bulb. And for it to become this high efficiency LED bulb, a highly bright screen, LED screens and
Correct.
A most jazzy screen 6 inches away from my face till I go to bed.
It feels like you're looking at the sun.
Yeah, exactly. And people will say I scroll my feed till I fall asleep. So I'm like, well, did you ever help your baby fall asleep by shining a flashlight into the baby's eye and sing them a lullaby? Was that ever what you did to help someone fall asleep?
Okay, I'm going to use this. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, why would we ever do that? Like, the same principles that apply to putting a baby to sleep is what you should be doing for yourself.
No parent has ever agreed that they put their baby to sleep with a flashlight on, poked into
their
eye.
Imagine if you actually find a parent like that.
You would have to report them, wouldn't you?
All right, so we got nutrition, we got sleep. Stress, how do we handle stress here?
Well, you're doing lots of podcasts on that one. You want to be honest answer?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we need to get back to some spiritual base, whether it is, it doesn't need to be God. I didn't believe in God. So if 8 years ago you would have told me, Roshni, you need to believe in God, I would have probably smacked you. So it doesn't need to be God. But whoever put planet Earth in her spot in this universe, whatever did that, whatever gave us predictable sunrise and sunset, that thing created us. We don't know how to create one more human body, do we? Really don't know how this is happening with us coming into be. And that energy is very wise. And if you just connect to that, I think it helps. If you zoom out and realize that, you know, Michael Singer is a favorite of mine these days. And he says that you're a little thing on a blue dot in the middle of nowhere, spinning around, just going nowhere. So what's your problem?
Yeah. Why are you taking yourself so seriously? Right? It just boils down to like two thoughts. One is, why are we taking ourselves so seriously?
Yeah.
It's all going to end soon.
It's all going to end soon.
Right? Might as well make the most of what we have right now. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And the second part is about this whole thing about spirituality. Just 2 days ago, recorded a podcast on this and saying that there are so many aspects to our life that we don't necessarily understand. We can feel it when you meet somebody, but we don't necessarily understand what it is and we get scared of that. But that is one aspect of spirituality.
Yeah.
You might land up at a particular spot on the earth that suddenly feels very weird, but lean into it because that's another format of spirituality.
And somewhere science and spirituality got into bad books with each other.
Yeah,
you know,
they
where
started fighting.
If you can't prove it, it didn't happen.
Correct.
And probably Albert Einstein was probably the closest to realizing that you can't always catch it all, but everything is energy around you, everything
Correct.
You see.
And even Tesla.
Yes.
Even Tesla spoke about it, right? So, not the cars, but like the scientist, when he was talking about it, he's saying everything is vibrations, right? And we can understand it from a science point of view. It's just that we don't have the tools to measure it yet.
Yeah, exactly.
As soon as we figure that out, we can understand it.
Exactly. So scientists or physicists will call it quantum energy, and spiritual teachers will call that consciousness.
Right.
It's the same thing, I guess.
No. So
Don't know. I'm okay not knowing.
But as long as we can tap into it.
Yes.
Right? That's the important thing. All right. So we got stress. We went out from a complete different rabbit hole with that one. And then the last one is exercise.
Yes. Exercise. So everybody, when they find out about diabetes, especially in India, they say, well, I'm going to now start my walks. Walks are great. One of the safest things to do. We were designed to walk. We're probably the only animal that walks like that. 2 feet. We evolved to free up our hands and do things. And that's how we got many steps ahead of the monkeys.
Correct.
And so walking is great. But that's not where it stops. the way fitness people will talk about it. And I trained as a fitness instructor just because I felt I don't know enough about so many things. My medical training has really not given me anything except really knowing how to prescribe drugs. Mm. And that wasn't satisfying. So in that, you know, cardio, flexibility, strength, all three are required. How are each of those tied to diabetes? Mm. Well, it's definitely cardio helps with keeping your cardio safe, because we say that diabetes is a direct cardiac risk. Mm. So doing exercise that keeps your heart efficient is good. Mm. Flexibility is also important. Mm. It goes two ways. If you have uncontrolled blood sugar, your joints do get more stiff.
Correct.
You have more inflammation inside, so your joints are not repairing themselves on a day-to-day basis, because the joints go through a lot of micro damage all the time. You're always bumping and nicking and traumatizing at a minor level, micro level, all day long. So the repair and recovery process is slow when you have sugar problems. So it is important to work on your flexibility consciously, along with the other three aspects. Mm. And strength training. Most people balk in India still at the idea of strength training. If I talk about the general audience, the fitness awareness is getting more known in India, but we still have a long way to go with being accepting of the fact that everybody needs to build muscle, whether you're young, middle-aged, aging, it doesn't matter. I would argue that someone who's aging, means anybody above the age of 25, basically, is losing muscle.
Correct.
And if you don't want to fall and fracture, you need to be using your muscles and training them.
You have to put on muscle. You have to put on muscle.
It's a prescription.
Right?
It's a prescription.
As a lady, you're not going to look like a guy. Just get that in your head.
You don't have the hormones for it.
You don't have the hormones.
I'll vouch for you on that.
But the thing is that if you don't put on muscle, how do you get maybe more fuel tanks, right, to deal with this excess sugar that's coming in?
Correct. The muscles would have swallowed up a lot of the fuel that was had nowhere to go. Mm. The muscle becomes more permeable, or the sugars can get into the muscles and the muscles will use them up. So again, they're going where they should have in the first place. Sugar was not supposed to be floating around in the bloodstream. Mm. It was supposed to be packed in your muscles for use when you exercise.
Yeah.
And this concept of, well, I don't have time. There are many smart ways of exercising. I don't even go to a gym myself. Whatever I have done for my fitness has been in my house.
Correct.
So being a working mother, working father, that's a real thing, you know, working father.
Really? Where do we find a working father?
Yeah, we always say working mom. Mm. It gives me time with my kids. Mm. It helps me to stay in the house when I'm around, when I'm away from the office, is working out in the house. So you can find ways to exercise the body without requiring a gym. The gym is a new age thing. Again, hunter-gatherer, just in the process of living in the wild, was doing a lot of stuff. And this is a very fancy argument that you should eat like your ancestors.
Yeah.
Very popularized. If you're from here, you should eat that. And if you came from there, you should eat that. And great. But then also do what your ancestors did with physical activity.
Yeah.
They pounded their wheat. Mm. They made their own ghee. Mm. They got the water from the well 10 miles away from the village and came with farmer's walk with huge buckets of water carried around. So their muscles were getting the training all the time. And then they were eating their hearty meal.
Right.
So, and they slept. Mm. They slept early. They woke up early with the birds. Mm. So there's a lot to say about, yes, if you're so fascinated by how your ancestors did things, then please
do this part as well. Right. Just don't do the food part. Right. Paleo diets. Okay. But how about paleo movements?
Yes.
Right. So that's important. Fantastic. But like, you know, I know somebody listening will say, yeah, but my dad is 70. Like him going to the gym, him putting on muscle. Like, how do I even start convincing that? Like, how do I get him off the sofa to do something like that?
Sure. So I guess everybody should hear this data point, is that falls and fractures in the elderly are more fatal than cancer.
Right.
So.
Ooh, scary.
Yes. Mm. Cancer gets a lot more attention than osteoporosis fractures do. But fall and fracture is actually more commonly taking lives, if you look at the numbers. Mm. And so statistically, it's something you need to worry about.
Correct.
Rather, it's something you need to do something about.
Absolutely.
So I get that from the elderly is, beta, I don't know if Hindi is allowed a little
bit.
Yeah,
go for it.
Yeah, so, is umar mein kya karna abhi? Mujhe kahan body badhana hai? Like, it's just to make sure you don't fall.
Yeah.
And to run around with your grandkids and to pick them up and not be bed bound after that because you sprained something. Mm. Water coming out of the shower with a wet floor. In India, we don't have slip-proof bathrooms. Everybody's got very slippery tiles in Indian bathrooms.
Correct.
So we have temples where you go to do your darshan and your morning spiritual thing, and there's a pothole on your way to the market. Mm. So you are exposed to the risk So why not just have the muscle with you to be fine?
Correct, because muscle adds cushioning. It mm-hmm. probably gives you the strength to probably stop yourself from falling.
Hop out of the hole.
Hop out of a way, correct? Mm-hmm. So it makes you a little bit more nimble.
Yes, it does.
So all these things are very important. And I'm sure you guys are wondering, what does this have to do with diabetes, right? Because you've gone down so far away from the topic. But it's important to understand that it's a lifestyle disease, right? Which is why we're doing an entire conversation on this, because the podcast is about lifestyle.
Well, and when you build muscle, your blood sugar comes down.
And so blood sugar comes down.
Forgot to say that.
Yay, we got it back down to diabetes. Like, so I think I was one of the first people who didn't have diabetes that would come to Roshni to get this thing called a continuous glucose monitor put on my body. What that did was it told me every couple of minutes, was it?
Every 15 minutes,
what my blood sugar level was. And that was so interesting because I would see it on a daily basis. My blood sugar would increase in the morning when I woke up. And then by afternoon, because I wasn't eating, my blood sugar level would come down. And then suddenly when I ate again, it would come up. But what I noticed was it wasn't spiking as much because of the kind of muscle that I had mm-hmm. that prevented it.
Absolutely.
Right? So yes, it's important for us to at least start getting our muscle in. And maybe if you're curious, get something like this to just see what your body is going through.
I got into a lot of trouble when I wore that, and I did it on purpose. It's not my normal diet, but I had two Sabudana Vadas. Oh, Sabudana is another Indian carb to look out for.
It's crazy.
It's really starchy.
It is tapioca starch. That means, you know, like you've heard of people saying, nahi, main chawal ka pani phek deti hun kyunki usme starch hota hai. Now you've taken that pani and made little balls out of it and turned that into a vada. That's what Sabudana is. Like, how stupid. Why are we eating things that are just pure sugar?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's also used as a popular fasting food. So not to offend anybody who has believed that it's good for you to use in your spiritual fast. But again, it's high starch. You know, from a nutrition perspective, you need to know that exactly that that's how it's made. I don't think people even know how Sabudana is made.
No.
So I took two Sabudana Vadas and I took a samosa. Mm. And on the sensor, my sugar spiked up like a mountain peak.
Correct.
And crossed the range. So that's not a blood sugar reading. It's under the skin. So it's not as accurate as a blood sugar reading.
Yep.
But it got into a danger zone.
Correct.
So, you know, I love Sabudana. Mm. At Ganpati, I still have Sabudana Khichdi at some of my friends' places with all the peanuts and stuff on top. But I know how much to take because it's pure starch.
Correct. And for me, it was the strangest things. It was a banana that spiked it, right? It was corn that spiked it. And these are things that we think of as healthy.
And they're healthy. Mm. It's not to not have banana. And there are these popular lists floating around is don't now eat banana, sitaful chiku, mango, you know, ice cream and all these banned items. I don't do that with my patients.
Okay.
The idea is not, the problem is not the banana. The problem is your fat stores. It's not that one last passenger who tried to get onto the train who's the problem. It's the fact that the train's overcrowded already, which is the problem. You can't ban one guy from trying to get on, right? Same way, it's not the one banana and the sugar from one banana that's the problem. It's the fact that there is no space.
So interesting. It's the accumulation that's taking place.
Yes. So when you have learned how to fast, empty out your storage sites, build up more storage sites by building the muscle and then have the banana in moderation, you'll be good to go. So I think that probably hopefully ties together the concept.
Lovely. A question on fasting. Who should not fast?
Children below the age of 18.
Okay.
Pregnant and nursing women.
Okay.
Beyond that.
Type 1 diabetics, not fast?
Unless they're being medically supervised.
Okay. So under medical supervision, type 1 diabetic. People with thyroid like issues?
Fast.
Fast?
Mm.
Like hyper, either?
Medical supervision, please.
Okay.
Yes, but yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not that because you have something you should not be...
No, if you're being well medically treated for your thyroid imbalance, for your PCOS, and your doctor is aware of it, and they've given you the green light, yes, I do work with my patients on that.
Mm.
Yes.
And PCOS is another one where people say that I have now PCOS and my life is over.
Or sadly, they feel that now they're meant to struggle with weight. Again, this is a diversion completely, but similar is PCOS is a problem with insulin also.
Okay.
So when you have PCOS, you are at more risk of getting type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Guess why? Because it's insulin that's the common factor.
Ah.
And it's the insulin which is causing all that weight gain. So that's the weight gain struggle is the PCOS through the insulin, not because of PCOS. It's the same insulin that's giving you PCOS is the same insulin that's giving you the weight gain. It's usually not your thyroid that's giving you the weight gain.
Yeah, in fact. And, okay, so one aspect is this whole lifestyle thing. But at the end of the day, diabetes is scary. right? It is a killer disease. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yes. Type 2 diabetes is a very sobering disease. Mm. It does kill people.
Mm.
It does damage organs.
Mm.
And that's the part we don't like about it. We've seen it in our families. We've seen how much suffering goes through. It's not a pretty way to go. And it's just very traumatic to the person as well as the relatives who are trying to help out. So it's very hunky-dory to say, yeah, it's reversible. But I don't want to make it too light. We need to realize that while we can work with somebody to get the blood sugars back down, even at an advanced stage, it takes longer and it's much harder to get the blood sugars down then. Especially if they were on insulin for many years, then the reversal is harder. It still does happen. But what may still be there as a permanent price is irreversible organ damage.
Okay.
We've seen kidney failure, and we had a lady who was on the verge of dialysis who came and said, can you help me get off the insulin? We said, sure, here's what we'll do. And we worked together, and she was able to come off of the insulin, but she still has stage 4 chronic kidney disease. It's, you know, which what we thought was impending dialysis has been able to be pushed off by about 2 years. So she's still not on a machine yet for dialysis. So we hope that that means some amount of kidney is hanging on. But she's had to go through quite a lot of kidney damage, which won't come back. Similarly, the eyes. We do lose, you know, you've seen people go through amputations. Those are things that don't come back. So it's not something to take lightly. And then sometimes, I guess, when you're passionate about something and you've seen how bad it can get and you've seen how good it can get, as a doctor, you tend to get caught up and you want the best for the patient. So it's important for the client to realize that this is what's happening inside the body. And we don't try to say that with a negative tone to it. We're trying to say, look, let's just work on this because there is hope to pull out. Let's do it sooner rather than later. This is not the kind of thing where, oh, yeah, it's on the border. I can wait. You know, if you had enemies on the border, you wouldn't just lay back, would you? You would do everything to safeguard yourself and protect and see to it that you're safe. So diabetes is something like that where I take borderline cases very seriously.
Mm.
I want it out ASAP. Mm. And that's when the sooner you start working on it, the faster you can reverse it. And there's good reason to reverse it. I don't think it's as simple as let me just keep my sugars in control with one med, two meds, three meds, four meds. The body is built to heal. If you get a cut, you don't need to go plan for how it's going to heal. It has a wisdom and intelligence to heal. It's always trying to repair this insulin imbalance, this fuel overload imbalance. And sometimes people will complain that my fasting sugar is the one that's always high. Why is it that after the meals, it's okay? I go to bed with an okay number and I wake up with a high number. It's like, yeah, that's your body overnight taking the opportunity of 8-10 hours when you're not putting food in. The body's like, hurry, hurry, let me get these passengers out of the train now while nobody's looking.
Mm.
Is it needs to offload all these passengers. So your liver is throwing stuff out overnight. So that's why your fasting sugar tends to be high. Is that's your body trying to heal itself. And we just try to smash that in with more medication, kind of misunderstanding what the problem is. So I guess I'd like to put in the positive aspect is, you can do this. The body will support you when you start making the changes. So what are we really waiting for?
Hmm. In fact, we should all start living this change right now. This podcast, I hope the penny drops that saying that I should never reach a stage where I get diabetes. And if somebody in my family has diabetes, we should never reach a stage where it says that things are hopeless. Right? There's always hope. There's always a change that you can do from now onwards. So why not do it?
Yeah, and from a space of self-love and not fear.
Absolutely. It's because I want the best for myself, not because I don't want to keep that worst thought of amputations and stuff like that.
Exactly.
You can't sell these things on fear.
No, no. So it's more of a towards strategy rather than away from strategy. Mm. Like, I'm working towards this. This is a positive goal I'm looking towards.
Correct.
And I have the right tools, the right knowledge, the right support, and you can do it.
Perfect. So, you know, Roshni, I keep hearing this saying that, you know, I'm going to get diabetes and it's okay because my mother has it. Now, what is like this? Like, there's genes, okay, but like...
Correct. So remember the nutrition, sleep, stress, exercise aspect. So while your DNA is there, you are also probably eating the same way in the same house. You have the same carbohydrates on the plate. You probably have the same stress points. You're probably all listening to the same news channels at night, and the way you cope with your problems in life, you're probably dealing with the same problems. Usually something that affects one of us affects everybody in the same house. So stress is contagious in a family. The sleep patterns, the family, all of them usually have this habit of being up with tube lights on till late in the night, waiting for the earning members to come back home and sit together. So sleep is messed up. And usually, you know, the same way that fitness is contagious, that you keep company of fit friends, and same way families tend to be either very sedentary or active. It's not usual for one member in the house to be very fit where everybody else is sedentary. So they actually host the same habits.
Correct. In fact, you don't just inherit your genes, you also inherit all the habits that the family has, right?
And we're talking to the habit coach.
So it's so interesting that it's not just genes. Get that out of the way. It's habits.
And that's something you can control, right?
In your hands, right? You know, one of the best things about being a habit coach is when I work with one client, it's not just that person's life that changes, but the family's overall health starts changing.
It's the ripple effect, the butterfly effect.
Na? Yeah. And I think it's paisa vasuli. You pay for one.
Very good. Get,
like four people get the benefit.
Yeah. Why not? Absolutely. I'm a good Jew. All for it. Paisa vasul.
If people want to get in touch with you, where should they get in touch with you? How should they get in touch with you?
Oh, so I am a very amateur social media enthusiast. Hmm. I have a Instagram handle, which is my first name and last name is the handle.
Say it.
Roshni Sanghani at Instagram.
No, it's at Roshni Sanghani. Oh, come on. We have to teach you everything. All right. R-O-S-H-A-N-I-S-A-N-G-H-A-N-I.
And
I, Roshni Sanghani.
Okay. And yes. And our clinic email is connect, C-O-N-N-E-C-T, @AsanHealth.
Okay.
A-A-S-A-A-N, health.com. And our website is asanhealth.com.
Yep. If any of you want to reach out to her, I suggest you'll go. I think she has this fantastic course that she's just started. We were discussing it the other day. I think it's a very good way of understanding diabetes instead of the same get meds, and you want to say your line. I love that line.
Better health, less medication.
I think that's a superb goal for us to live by. Thank you so much, Roshni, for coming.
Thanks a lot for having me.
My pleasure.